And welcome to part two of Mutant Movie Club's Game of Thrones podcast, season 6, episode 5, The Door. Enjoy. So this scene brings us back to Tia's earlier question about the religions in this world. The children don't necessarily worship gods. They are kind of gods in their own right. Like, they are the old gods, kind of. The old gods, as they're nature gods. There's 1,001. They're unnamed gods. But the men of the north, ancestrally called the first men, they in the course of fighting this war that caused the children to create the White Walkers, they accepted the children's religion, their nature religion. They're like, I guess you could call it a pagan or druid religion or whatever, as a term of the surrender. And then the Drowned God is like a spinoff of that, and the Seven came later as a different human invasion many millennia later. It's a different version of, like, the old gods and the Drowned God are similar, and then the Andals and the faith of the Seven is more like a straight up feudalistic medieval variety of Christianity, and like the Drowned God is a version of Cthulhu and a great being sleeping under the waves that'll one day come and destroy the world. But yeah, you see that as a result of this war with the First Men, this war of invasion, you get the White Walkers that eventually at some point, I guess, just got away from the children and figured out how to raise the dead and broke away from them. And a Frankenstein monster thing, like we were saying earlier. It's an interesting bit of history, no question. And there's a crazy amount written all over the internet about this kind of stuff. And like, Bobby, what book specifically are you talking about?
What? Oh, the bigger... the world of ice and fire. It's the whole untold history of Westeros. Yeah,
it's like written by some maester, right?
Yeah, it's written in the tone of a maester.
Okay, I've thought about getting that.
Like Martin had to do with it, but it was also written by those fanatics.
Oh, the Song of Ice and Fire guys. Okay, gotcha.
Bobby, are you listening to me? No.
This hog smells too good.
But after this game-changing vision, Bran, he wants to see more, so he can't sleep. And he, while everyone else in the tree is sleeping, he goes and has a vision by himself, and he goes back to the same weirwood grove from earlier, which is now frozen and presumably behind the wall. And he turns around and sees an army of wights, and he walks through their decaying, broken ranks and until he's face-to-face with the Night's King and several White Walkers. The Night's King acknowledges Bran's presence, and he grabs his arm, and Bran jerks awake, and he's got a brand on his arm now from the Night's King, and that's a big problem, because now he can get into this tree. He can walk through the wards that were set up way back when, at the end of the fourth season. So that sets up the big ending of the episode.
When I was watching this part, all I can think of is how Blair just laughed at Bran every time she saw him in the previews, and it just happened to end up being the biggest fuck-up in the entire show so far.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, it was very Lord Voldemort in the cemetery, I can touch you now, Harry.
Right, and I noted that as well. Like, this kind of seems to give them the same kind of connection that Harry Potter and Voldemort had their entire lives, or Harry's life. Well, that's what it is. Like, now he can kind of know where Bran is, and it even, you know, marked him on his arm. We'll see where it goes for that. Like, I don't know if he'll be able to follow Bran wherever he's going.
Are we trying to say there's some, like, long connection between the two?
No. It's a connection that just started, although it could be, the way Bran can time travel. Yeah. I've already seen theories that Bran is actually Bran the Builder who put the wall up himself.
And every other Bran.
Right, every other brand in the entire world.
That might be reaching a little bit.
Brandon Stark.
Yeah, there's some the blacksmith's kid from like 3,000 years ago. Oh, that's, yeah, right. He was just named Brandon. Brand, whatever, who cares? But the big climax of this episode is the Raven thinks he's got more time than he does, and he takes Bran through to more visions. But while these are happening, the Night's King shows up with this huge army of whites, and they just attack the tree, and the White Walker is able to walk through the ward, and the whites are able to claw through the ceiling and start pouring in. Mira and the rest of the children get some solid kills in. Mira is actually able to kill a White Walker herself, but there's just too many of them, and Bran will not wake up. So the Raven, I might be getting the order of this wrong, so stop me if I mess it up. But the Raven understands what's happening, and he tells Bran that it's time to go. And he hears some of the voices in the real world break into his vision. And Hodor, as is his wont, is cowering in the corner.
He first hears Mira say, "Wake up, we need Hodor."
That's
and
right.
The Raven says, "Listen to your friend."
Okay.
And that kind of puts him in the warg.
Gotcha. So Bran doesn't exactly wake up. He wargs into young Willis in the past. And
it's like an Inception thing.
Yeah. This is a new frontier for Game of Thrones.
Although not immediately. Young Willis/Hodor didn't realize it until Big Hodor was already warged and headed toward the door.
Yeah. So Bran Hodor's, or not Bran Hodor's, Bran wargs into young Hodor. He grabs the cart and starts pushing it out. Several people try and sacrifice themselves to slow the whites down ineffectually. Summer is torn to pieces. One of the children blows herself up, aliens style. But they're still coming. They're still charging down the entire wall, ceiling, sides of the wall. There's so many of them. They're just on top of each other. And they get to a door that the children had installed in this tree cave, an emergency exit. And they get it open at the last second and push through it. And Mira takes over for Hodor and yells back, "Hold the door, hold the door, hold the door." And it breaks through to young Hodor, who has a seizure and starts saying it over and over and over again, while Hodor in the present is holding the door while the whites are breaking through slowly. And eventually hold the door is shortened into Hodor, and Hodor is killed, and Bran and Mira go off into the woods. Pretty great sequence.
Do you think Guinness keeps like a
killing again?
You know, I think just wolves are a pain in the ass to get on camera.
They're another CGI nightmare.
You said that, yeah. Brendan said last night, do you think they're tired of CGIing the direwolves in?
I do think there's an actual animal there that is enlarged.
In there CGI. Is because that, yeah. Sansa, the real life Sansa, adopted her direwolf.
That was the young one, but they said once they got bigger, they had to start CGIing them.
Okay, so there's no wolf there at all.
I don't know. I know Ghost is pretty much all CGI, as big as he is.
But. Yeah, now that you mention it, there are some scenes that are pretty obvious.
So they're killing them because CGI. Of budget?
Possibly.
Potentially, yeah.
Or it was sort of a like, hey, that was the big sacrifice. No, the child of the forest is the big sacrifice. No, fucking Hodor is the big sacrifice. So
yeah, it just how ineffectual these people are, I think, is the point. Like, you cannot stop all this stuff. You can just maybe push the inevitable off for a few brief seconds.
Bran's been told this because he's tried to say, "I don't want anybody dying for me," which we still don't really know why people are dying for him. Besides, he seems to be ridiculously powerful, but we saw Jojen die for him, and now we've seen all these people die for him, and it just keeps going. And
I think see where it goes. We get the point of how important Bran is now, right, without anyone actually coming out and saying it. Like, he can impact the past. He can change the future. Or the present. Or the future. I don't know. This time travel stuff. I subscribe to the Looper School on time travel. The Looper School being, who gives a shit? If we try and figure all this, if we try and figure out all the curly cues, we're going to be sitting in this diner for hours, throwing on napkins. Let's just throw our hands up in the air and assume that it's fine because we're here. So I'm not necessarily interested in like parsing the loop nature of it. I think in the context of the show, like the darkest version of the show, in which these upper class characters that we know and love, their very presence is detrimental to the people that they're in charge of. I think this is a perfect illustration of that. Like Hodor, the large majority of his life, it's just been setting up this one single action of keeping his superior, his liege lord alive. And what just a stupid waste that is of Hodor's life. I think it's very in keeping with what I hope the show is, which is the destruction of the existing system of this world.
Right. I think it was absolute brilliant writing, though, like the way it was done. And it's one of the few things that I don't recall ever seeing fans have theories about. Like, obviously, we had tons of Hodor theories that we've discussed before. So
yes. I'm still uncertain he didn't warg right back into a horse.
Well, see, I'm more worried of Hodor becoming a white now.
That'd be really cruel.
It would be possible. I don't think they would just dismiss it because it's cruel.
That's a standard zombie trope where you see someone you knew as a zombie and you have a hard time killing that person even though you know exactly what this person is now.
One of the Night's Watchmen was killed, comes back, and one of the brothers had to fight him.
I think that's before they know the rules. Now I think that's over and done with.
Well, sure, but
he'll be turned into a white. No question. But as far as if we actually see him again, I hope not. Just because I agree. Yeah, it would be cheap. As far as the implications, someone mentioned how crazy the internet has got over this development. Bran turned the Mad King mad, trying to prevent all these instances from happening. Bran is Bran the Builder. Bran is other stuff. I don't know. We'll see what happens here. But theoretically, anything's on the table now.
Did actually have an article today about some blogger dude predicted it had something to do with holding a door. Because he wrote a letter to George R. R. Martin a few years ago. The prediction was written and posted, seriously 3 or 4 years ago.
Well, you're right, but what he was saying was that because his life consists so much of carrying things and people for others, that he's always just been saying, hey, hold the door for me, and then it's just become Hodor because he's pissed that nobody's holding the door for him. So yeah. It was a little off, but hold the door was still there.
I didn't read the whole thing. So.
He got the bare specifics right, but as far as like circumstances and all that, I mean, who would have got that?
So then where do we think Bran and Mira are headed? I know some people...
I think we're going to see someone from book 3 in the next episode that we haven't seen yet. Let's just go for it. We're going to see Cold Hands.
With a giant stag? I don't know if we will. Maybe. I wouldn't mind.
There's no scenario where they survive otherwise.
Who is Cold? Can you go for the people that didn't read it?
Yeah.
Cold Hands in is book a...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Is a dead former Watchman ranger who rides this giant dead stag. Right at the stag, I believe.
Yes.
Could that be?
And he helps.
Right.
Helps Sam and Bran and all of them, whoever, get through the wall through like some magical doorway on their way north. So he's kind of like their escort/guide north of the wall for a bit.
What was the uncle's name? I forget.
Benjen.
This guy's supposedly hundreds of years old. So I mean, it could be Benjen. People have thought that, but
based on the time hopping and all this stuff,
true.
Yeah. I think in the books, he's definitely not, Cold Hands is definitely not Benjen.
Here he
in
probably
the show, he very well might be. So like, I think that's very much a possibility.
This is going to lead to the most north we'll ever go, to the supposed like origin of the White Walkers, which is the Heart of Winter, I believe it was called. Bran saw it in his vision, and that's what they called it. Where it's the north is, or it's always winter, et cetera, the land of always winter. So I figure we'll end up there and see the Great Other, which I don't know if it's supposed to be the same person as the Night King. I don't think so.
That's a positive. I can't, it's hard to imagine a scenario where Mira and Bran agree to that. They're so understaffed right now as far as getting from one place to another. There's only more White Walkers. Yeah, right? I mean, they very well should be.
They've is there a temp so service?
I mean, Mira's going to really miss Hodor when she gets tired of toting that wheelbarrow.
Yeah, well, there's the point. Really carry him.
Yeah, exactly. Something has to happen, like, and immediately in the next episode.
But there's
because
Rand can Hodor also pretty much do anything. Like, he can warg a giant animal or anything else and pretty much do what he wants at this point, right?
But he's totally defenseless in that period, and there's just too many. There's too many whites to do anything
there's
about
also
it.
Too much. They still need to tell us through Bran's visions.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
They've abandoned us at the Tower of Joy.
So he needs to get to safety very soon because Hodor, for his heroic sacrifice, it bought him like 200 yards of room, which is fine. It's totally appropriate because the White Walkers are an unstoppable force. But, you know, get on that stag and go. The most intriguing thing I read about this development is that the wall has wards on it that prevent White Walkers from going across it. Presumably the same wards that kept the White Walkers out of that tree. So if Bran goes to the wall, he's opening up the rest of the world to the White Walkers, which is potentially how they get through without just breaking the wall down, because they can't stay. They can't stay.
Bran being Bran.
But we kind of skipped over it back at the wall when we didn't say how Ed was left as, you know, de facto Lord Commander. But he said, or John told him, you know, don't let them bring the wall down, or don't bring the wall down when you're gone. And that seemed like a big foreshadow moment of either something with Bran or the wall's going to physically come down.
I think it's got to be one or the other. As long as the White Walkers are just kind of barricaded up north, who cares? It's a problem for those characters up there, but the only character we know still at the wall is Ed. So I don't think we're going to be spending a lot more time with the wall in the near future. So the wall's got to come down, basically, or they need to get through.
So a couple reader or listener questions from this area. A lot of Direwolf questions. I think we kind of answered this one. Gina M. from Richmond, VA says, why do they hate wolves? Why?
Because they don't hit their marks, I think, is their reason.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the ass to get on camera.
That's right.
And the CGI budget if they're all fake.
Yeah, I think it's a CGI budget. Megan N. wants to know, why are you still killing Direwolves? There's your answer. Are all the Direwolves dying? A foreshadowing what's going on? What's going to happen to their owners and the complete total destruction of the Stark family? Does the fact that Ghost is white indicate he's definitely a Targaryen?
I think number two is we're kind of going the opposite direction of the destruction compared to earlier seasons with the Stark family, because now we have them in multiple regions doing well, like except for Rickon, but we haven't seen him in a couple episodes.
I think that's still fine.
Been the fan theory with the Direwolves and it spelling disaster for the Stark kids, but I think that's just us being superstitious.
Pessimistic.
Yeah, pessimistic. Pessimistic.
Well, and Sansa has really outlived Lady at this point, so I think that throws that out.
Yeah. Yeah, like John, he said his thing back in the pilot. There's five of them, and there's five Stark kids. They're meant for you.
But
they just haven't done anything with that in the show, really. The only one that can warg in the show is Bran, whereas in the books, they are all able to warg into their wolves. And that connection...
Except for Sansa.
Except for Sansa, whose wolf died. Yes.
For number three, I don't think the ghost is what... That ghost indicates Jon being a Targaryen. just that he's the outcast and different in general. Like, he is not a true Stark. But more so, there was supposedly Targaryen music played briefly before Jon killed Ollie and Alistair, which I didn't catch, but I read that
somewhere. Targaryen music.
Like, you know, like the whole Targaryen theme type thing that you hear for each house has a little theme. And that's probably why we didn't catch it, because I don't know the Targaryen theme. But supposedly there's a little snip of music that relates to the Targaryens played right before he cuts the rope.
Maybe. When I think of, like, the Targaryen theme, I think of, like, Dany's victory music. like, before, when she was burning down Astapor, that right. music. I didn't. That's certainly possible. They've got, like, the terrible decision music that played when Theon was taking Winterfell and when Robb was killing Lord Karstark. That occasionally shows up. I do love the scoring in the show.
Speaking of that, we need to move on. So we, speaking of terrible decisions, move on shortly to Sean's product rankings.
Yeah, but please.
Before we do that, anyone know what that was? This is Andrew C. Ask, what's up with the dagger?
I assume it was Dragonglass.
Yeah, it's Dragonglass.
But it's odd. Like, historically, the Children of the Forest are known for working with Dragonglass or Obsidian, but that's what kills a White Walker. So that is like saying Superman is made of kryptonite, which doesn't make sense to me. But that's all. I mean, that's what it looked like. So I'm assuming that's what it was. It's just odd. What they used to make them, and that's also what can kill them. It just seems odd.
Was that what they used to make them? It just looked like it was white, whatever it was, right?
So it was dark.
It was a dark piece of dragon glass.
Was it?
Right, yeah, the opposite of white.
All right, I don't remember. Hey, guys, I don't see colors. It's 2016.
All right. Do we want to do Sean's power rankings or blow through
Let's
some
do power rankings.
Listener questions?
Let's do power rankings.
This is where I'd play the music.
Okay, good music. Our power rankings are top five worst decisions that ultimately backfired for that particular character in the series. Number five, I'm going with Khaleesi freeing Mira Marzdul from her rape after one of their conquests, which immediately led to Khal Drogo dying of a flesh wound and then losing her baby. So yeah, that didn't work out very well for her. Number four, Ned Stark, private investigator.
Reasonable.
Number three,
he's a stupid hillbilly, that Ned Stark. Oh,
right. Now I'm picturing him with like a noir voice. Well, say we're gonna go find out who killed the king or Robin Ann.
Cup of Joe.
It's like a pet cemetery.
Cup of Cersei's Joe. Gams.
All right, number three, Theon not listening to his father's orders and deciding to sack Winterfell with basically 20 guys and then losing the Stark children and ultimately his manhood. Number two, Cersei arming the Faith Militant, who is now her immediate threat in King's Landing and leading to her walk of shame. And then number one from last night, the Children of the Forest creating the Night's King.
I think that's reasonable. People make a lot of short-sighted decisions in this show, no question. It's hard to rule a kingdom, which is why this whole system is dumb.
So now,
solid power ranking, Sean.
What song did you want for that again?
I don't think we had established a song for that one.
No,
I don't know. Bobby had a suggestion on there, but I didn't recognize the song.
Yeah. I thought of Bad Time to Be in Love by the Jayhawks.
Okay, a little Corolla shot out on that one.
There you go. We'll work on it.
That's our main competition is the Corolla podcast, so I'm right hesitant to even bring them up. What do we got for listener questions this week, Shane? We've been knocking out a few by and by, but
sponsored by?
Oh, Big Yellow Dog.
Okay.
Catchphrase, slogan?
You don't have a slogan?
How about, what if you just made one up on the spot?
Go for it.
I'm seeing if you have any ideas here.
Other people's bottle openers might be rough, but ours aren't.
like off the top of my head, appeasing bitchy brides since 2012.
Yeah. And there goes a quarter of your business, just like
that. that I love.
Let's go, listener questions. Dan H. I think he's from Missouri at this point. Do you recommend iron or Valyrian steel for hinges on cave dwelling doors?
I think you got to go Zarzo and Doxos and make it out of Valyrian stone, whatever that is. I think that's the way to make a door.
Right. Not for the hinges. Hinges, I'd say Valyrian steel hinges so that you could pop the hinges door off and then like stab people with them.
That's very utilitarian.
But how about dragon glass?
Same thing.
Jeffrey,
we're not carpenters here at the Media Movie Cast.
No, obviously not. Borg kind of does sometimes.
That's a blacksmith question. I got nothing for you.
Right, stupid blacksmiths. Take a bath, why don't you?
I didn't bring him.
All right, Jeffrey G asks, exactly how long did you cry after watching last night's episode? Any tears?
I screamed from the dire dolphin.
A little, a lump in the throat.
There was a little water.
Yeah, I think what I was trying to say earlier, I think Guinness might have a statement that the most tears ever flooded at 9 Eastern on a Sunday night.
I was making a lasagna for one.
that was I didn't cry, but like I said, it ruined Silicon Valley for me.
I tend to be more affected by like good things happening on Game of Thrones. Like the gold standard is the wolf bread for me as far as crying during Game of Thrones. That just knocked me out.
Just fucking hot pie, man.
I mean, Arya having a good moment. Who couldn't love it?
Wolf bread made you cry? Is that what?
Yeah, that was a beautiful scene. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, man. You just managed some good old mutton right on top of that wolf bread.
Any show can be sad and tragic. It takes real like talent to be joyful. And joyful gets me going.
All right. Kayleen G from Indiana. Spoilerish tinfoil hat theory alert. Do you think Littlefinger knows about R plus L equals J? She means the half-brother remark seemed more sarcastic than passive-aggressive.
Yes. Maybe in the show, but I don't think he does. I mean, really, it's just only supposedly one other person in the world knows.
Well, when he was dropping Sansa off at Winterfell for Ramsay and down in the crypts, when Ramsay was talking about how, you know, Lyanna had been kidnapped and, you know, started these problems, he was suggesting, pretty suggestive, that it wasn't really a kidnapping. So maybe he does know a little bit.
I think he knows or is pretty sure that John isn't Ned's son, because smart people have mentioned that in the show and the book, where he was just too honorable to do such a thing. But I don't know. I think it'd be a little, especially if he knows that, and John's going to pretend he doesn't know how much of a jackass Ramsay is. That's pushing it.
Yeah,
I think Littlefinger also. I'm sorry. I think he suspects. I think he spent a lot of time around Robert Baratheon, who probably complained about this all the time, and he saw what a sack of shit he was later in his life. And I would imagine that at some point he wondered, what if he's misinterpreting this whole thing, because he's a drunken idiot who doesn't really know what he's talking about. He's good at one thing and one thing only. I don't think he can't know. That's impossible. But I definitely think he suspects. Just because, I mean, it makes sense. I think Littlefinger does think about angles, and a potential angle to this story is that what if the winner who is writing history has it wrong?
All right. Last question. And because a couple people wrote some really long questions, I wasn't going to read all that. Nick B. asks, please explain in detail the mid-30s male population's fascination with Harry Potter disguised as an HBO miniseries.
Boo.
Yeah, boo.
Now, this guy, he writes my paychecks, and I think he's got a lot of important opinions on this.
I don't think he's paying for anything to do with the podcast, though.
Are you are you telling me we've got nothing for all these advertisements? Ashley, are you saying we're not getting anything for these advertisements?
From Big Yellow Dog?
From Benzie, I mean. That's some bullshit.
I will say I order We've all my been stuff garbling. For work through the website, including my stationary bicycle desk.
We'll take it. You know, Game of Thrones, we're going to treat this question seriously. Game of Thrones takes all the Lord of the Rings. Like, everybody loves Lord of the Rings, I think.
No.
All right. Well, you love Harry Potter specifically. I think you're going to love one or the other. So I think for a lot of people, these kind of stories are a big part of their cultural life. And not just those specific properties, but this kind of storytelling. Chosen One storytelling. Hero's Journey storytelling. And Game of Thrones flips it on its head in a lot of instances when it's at its best, and I mean, and the books do it as well. So it's a subversive storytelling in a lot of ways, on top of the characters and the spectacle of it. It's a good show.
Or simply, Sam Tarly said it best: "Is I always wanted to be a wizard."
Well, how about I offer a alternative theory for Nick B? Okay, as children, everybody likes the magic. So that's Harry Potter. And so how it converts to the 30-year-old middle age is you take Potter.
Children like magic in Harry Potter, actually.
Right.
Children.
But then how to convert that to the 30-year-old, as he's suggesting, add tits and dragons.
Well, in the beginning, there wasn't a lot of magic anyway. It was just... you know, period piece with tits.
Yeah, we got the high-minded and we got the low-minded explanation of the appeal of Game of Thrones. I think we've covered it all. Yeah, that'll bring us to the end of the episode, or to the end of this episode. What did, if we wanted to put a grade on this, on the door, what would we give it?
I'm at a solid A for this one. This is my first solid A of the season.
I agree with Bobby.
I had A-.
I'm at legit A.
Yeah.
Ladies.
Hardcore A's.
I'll do A-, just because I the Arya stuff.
Okay, that's fair.
A-.
All right. Season keeps getting better and better. My trepidation is more or less gone away, which is a good place to be in.
That's right.
Thanks for joining me this week, guys.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
We'll talk again next Monday. Have a good night. If I die, know I lived and missed some bullets. I'm on the pursuit of happiness, and I know everything that's shining on.